Hello and welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green, and joining me this week, as always, is science expert Sari Riley.
Hello.
And our resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
Hi.
It was a long October. It was very spooky, and we're all very tired after our long, spooky Halloween. I've heard that, Sari, that you overindulged on Halloween. Is that right? What did you drink? What did you have?
I drank so much ectoplasm. It just kept pouring out of my walls, and I scooped it up and put it right in my tummy. Oh, and now I have the worst ghostly hangover.
I think she had a whole ghost. At least one.
One ghost worth of ectoplasm. Not what you're supposed to do with it.
I did the pumpkin challenge. It's where you fill a pumpkin with vodka, and then every day you drink a little bit of it until at the very end you just have like the grossest vodka. And you have to finish it on Halloween.
How did that go for you?
You put a lot of nutmeg in. That's how you sort of balance it.
Actually,
it
sounds really nice.
It's a spicy mold.
What did you have, Sam?
I didn't drink anything, but somebody just hit me in the head with a big axe. So, so that was.
Did you get him back?
No, I died.
No.
We all have headaches today. One of us drank a ghost, one of us drank a pumpkin full of vodka, and one of us got axe murdered.
And it's definitely not October 25th, and we're lying also.
Is it October 31st right now for them?
No, it's November something. We had a rerun last week, so it's even later. We had hangovers for 2 weeks long. Wow. Then I really would have been.
That's going to be super confusing then. If it's coming out November 7th.
Yeah, they'll figure it out.
Okay.
We got really, really drunk.
Well, if it's coming out November 7th, you're halfway through your chance to sign up for this year's Awesome Socks Club, where all of our socks profit goes to charity. But also, it's a delight every week. I mean, month, you get a different pair of socks designed by a different independent artist delivered right to your door. And we now have ankle socks as well as the mid-calf cruise that we've always had. So we got ankle socks and we're shipping out of the European Union. If you don't want to pay those pesky customs fees, and for shipping is free. And you can go to awesomesocks.club, sign up right now.
You're such a pro, Hank.
Yeah, well.
Turn that one right around.
I need to know when these episodes are coming out. I got a promotion schedule. I need people to know about the wonderful amazingness of the Awesome Socks Club. I'm wearing the socks right now. They're very comfortable. We work very hard to make them very cozy and comfortable, including Sam's lovely fiance, Rachel, who is one of the main drivers of the Awesome Socks Club.
We have so many socks here, Hank. We got to stop.
I can't tilt my camera down, but like. I am also all socked up right now. Yep.
But they're great socks. They're beautiful.
They're great, beautiful socks. They are. But that's not what we came here to talk about today.
What did we come here to talk about today?
Every week here on Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory and for Hank Bucks, which I'll be awarding as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of them will be crowned the winner. Now, as always, we introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem. It's not socks. This week from Sam.
A splinter, a hangnail, a headache, a stitch, a paper cut, contusion, a fracture, an itch, a tumble, a slip, a sprain, a bruise, a sore throat, a slipped disc, a bug bite, the blues, a slip on the ice, a punch in the nose, a sty in the eye, or a stomp on the toes, a bump on the noggin, a burn from a flame, to be gored, stabbed, or shoved, to be mauled, to be maimed, from bad news to bad food, from a scrape to a hit, pain helps us navigate the world, but that doesn't mean it's not bullshit.
Pain is the episode, is the thing in the show that we're talking about today, which is necessary and important and also often malfunctions into territory of being pure BS, but also even when it's doing its job correctly, it's no fun. I'll tell you that.
I wish when I had a headache, I could just say, okay, I understand, body. I do have a headache. You can stop alerting me to the fact now.
There isn't anything I can do to fix this problem, so stop telling me about it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we don't have that power. And this is, I don't think, going to be an easy one, but Sari, what is pain?
No, it's not an easy one, but I'll take a stab at it. So according to researchers who study pain, it is both a sensory and emotional experience that is associated with actual internal or external tissue damage or potential damage.
Oh, yeah.
And any descriptions around that. From what I can find, we use pain pretty loosely to apply to all animals, like, because it is a common and easy word, and we get the concept of owie, hurt. It hurts. Do animals hurt? I don't know. Let's use the word pain to ask those questions about everything. In humans, the biopsychosocial model of pain is what a lot of people use, which is a combination of biological factors, so how your body physically responds to a trauma, psychological factors, so how your brain responds to that trauma, and then social factors, so how we as social animals respond to pain differently if we're putting on a show for others, or if our culture has told us that our pain isn't valid. How does that change your experience of pain? And when we talk about pain in non-human animals, it seems like the general trend is to specifically call it nociception, which is tissue injury. Like, how do they respond and react to tissue injury, and what kind of negative stimuli are sent through the nervous system? And if there are less complex nervous systems, then you start getting into language of, like, how do they just respond to noxious stimuli? Do they crawl away or
wiggle,
whatever bacteria do? Wiggle, wiggle bad, or stop eating.
Wiggle
or
different.
Like not go. Yeah. I don't know.
So the researchers say that that's an important part of pain, is the emotional aspect of it. Like, that's an
like, I don't like this being like the sort of like simplest version of the emotion, but like, can you not like something if you are a worm? We're not sure. Right. Like, is it like, do they have liking and not liking, or do they have just sort of like react when certain biochemical pathways are triggered, react in certain ways?
So we think that the reason for pain is to alert us to something bad. And that's like the idea of pain as a protection, a layer of protection biologically, psychologically, to, ouch, I'm touching a hot thing, or, oh no, an axe murderer bonked me on the head.
It hurt, you know, I gotta tell you.
Yeah.
All the situations in which you may not know something bad is happening, and then your body is alerting you to tissue damage that's happening that maybe you can prevent in some way or treat after the fact.
But then the systems get so complicated that we end up with pain even in situations when we don't need to have it.
Yeah. And so there's this category of non-protective pain, which is everything else that scientists don't quite understand. So like the chronic pains that come with terminal cancer or nerve injuries or migraines, when who knows what your body, when you get that weird ache in your shoulder, and did you do something bad? I don't know. You slept weird. It's not telling you anything that you can change now.
It's like, what? Why do I have that? Rubbing it doesn't help. Stretching it doesn't help. Nothing helps. It's just there. Thanks.
Yeah.
But we developed it to protect ourselves. But then we also ended up with kinds of pain that really don't do that job.
And I think of a lot of the things that we define on the podcast, it is, we say a lot, like, you know it when you see it, you know a hole when you see it, you know I don't know, a frog when you see it, but not always. But pain is very much a human experience, and it's like, you know your pain more than anyone else knows your pain,
right?
And it's so subjective, to the point where even scientists, like anything neuroscience-y, I consistently think that in a couple hundred years, we'll look back on what we know now and be like, oh, we didn't know anything about the brain.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Like, this is the area in which medical technology
is preventing us from learning so much about it, or just like we haven't studied it long enough. And so pain is one of those things where we have these scales, we have these subjective tests where we have people report demographic information about themselves and then ask them to rate their pain on a number scale. And those are all over the place because we have no good way of equalizing these sensations of pain because they're so multifaceted across different people.
You know what I've always thought is that we should have a scale for pain and you like just make the noise that the pain would be.
Ooh.
So like my back hurts a little bit right now and the noise is like, but like quieter than that, like it's like that's what it hurt. That's how it feels.
Would louder be hurt more?
Louder is more. But then there's like also like sharp pain and dull pain. Like though, like you, we know what those things mean. But I feel like if I stub my toe, it's like that's the noise.
Yeah, that's
accurate. I just want to go into the doctor and the doctor be like, what is it on a scale of like to like
Hank, I think I've broken your system already because even when I bump into something and I don't experience pain, I say ow. I don't know why. I like feel bad. I bump into the chair, I go ow.
Ow.
And then I really think about it and like, there was I don't no hurt pain. At all.
I just
there's
ow.
None. I just out because that's my reaction to bumping into something. So my
next time you have a pain, try and make the noise. Do it in voice memos and send it to me.
Okay. Everybody do that to Hank. Send him tweets of you screaming in various ways.
Pain noises. Actually, look, just send it to me on Twitter. I'll listen. I want to hear your pain.
It sounds like a very caring sentiment. Like, I want to hear your pain. But no, from Hank, it's like, really, I want to hear your
weird noise that you make. Do we know anything about the etymology of the word pain?
So pain comes from the Latin pena, like a subpoena that you issue to someone to summon them to.
Is it like drawing your attention to something? Is that what it is? Or no?
No, it's for punishment or penalty or retribution. Oh, so a subpoena is specifically requiring a defendant to come to court to answer a charge or a penalty that is issued against them.
Okay.
And it's like subject to penalty if you don't comply. Mm. So that's why it's a subpoena. So that's where pain comes from. But nociception also comes from a Latin root of nocere, which means to do harm, or noxious is unwholesome or harmful, like those words. The Nosferatu.
Is it Nosferatu?
Yeah. Sure.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely Nosferatu. Okay. It means a really bad Ferratu. You can getcha.
But next, we are going to do the quiz portion of our show, where I've got a quiz for the two of you. Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Okay. Good. So, pain is, of course, while unpleasant, a necessary part of our experience of life. It helps our bodies identify potentially harmful situations. But as familiar as pain can be, it sometimes manifests or does not manifest in strange or acutely unwelcome ways. The following are three strange scientific stories about pain, but only one of them is true. Can you tell me which one it is? Is it story number one? To help dogs prepare for dental surgery, a veterinarian designed a dog pacifier that has a painkiller dissolved into the material, and the dog sucks on the pacifier.
No,
the painkiller is slowly released into their mouth so that it can work directly where the surgery happened.
Dog don't have lips. Dogs can't suck on a pat. Okay, what are the rest
of them? Just imagine a little dog with its little purse lip.
You know, it's specifically made for doggy mouths. Or it could be. Could be story number two. Scientists studying cats realized that the cats are able to distribute their weight on their paws to minimize pain while walking on sharp surfaces. To confirm this, scientists filled a room with Legos and monitored the cats for pain as they navigated this precarious landscape. Or scientists are weird. You know, scientists are weird. But it also could be story number three. Scientists have found that a flesh-eating bacteria pokes holes in pain receptors using a toxin. This has the double effect of making the infection extremely painful, but also cutting off signals to immune cells that would alert them to the bacteria's presence.
So you got cats, dogs, and flesh-eating bacteria. Bacteria. Kind of thought you were going with the theme there.
The three best pets.
So it yeah, could the three be best pets. My dog, Pete, my cat, Pete, and my flesh-eating bacterium, Pete.
So it could be the veterinarians designing a painkiller pacifier for dogs, scientists constructing a Lego labyrinth for cats, or flesh-eating bacteria poking holes in your pain cells. It's protecting themselves from your immune system.
So they stop you from feeling pain as much. Is that what they're doing? So
no, they make you feel pain more, but they mess up the systems, the systems that the immune system use to transfer information, apparently.
So you hurt a lot, but your body can't defend against them. So it's all bad.
I'm very not in favor of flesh-eating bacteria. If this is the one, that's very worrying because I don't like pain.
And you like your flesh?
You know, as opposed to not having it. Yeah, for sure. It's not usually, so I don't like look in the mirror and say, nice, I like that flesh.
But, but if you had looked in the mirror and you had a skull for a face, you'd say, gosh, I missed it. I didn't appreciate it while I was here.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Exactly right.
The other two seem so goofy compared to it. Like flesh-eating bacteria poking holes in neurons. Yeah. It's like, okay, this is, what's we're talking about here? Science here.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, here's my cat. Some Legos are on the ground. Here's my dog. Here's a little pacifier.
A little pacifier like a freaking baby.
Yeah. Two of them are cartoons. And then there's flesh-eating bacteria staring me in the face.
Yeah, this is cheating.
Yeah, I like to keep it mixed up. Never know what you're going to, never know what to expect.
I think I stand by dog, like, that's such a weird way to describe what a dog would do with a pacifier, because I think it would chew up whatever it had, right? Like, or well, like if it's in its mouth, it would chew.
Dogs do nurse. Like they suck a teat and get the dog milk from it.
I mean, you could have just said dogs nurse and not understand what that means.
I gotta really help you visualize it, Sam. So like
Sam, there's nothing wrong.
No, I know there's not, but I don't know.
Yeah. So they obviously, you got to make the fat pacifier shaped like a dog teat.
Like a dog teat. Okay.
Cover it in sugar and then they'll suck on it.
And a cat doesn't care about Legos. Gonna walk straight through the Legos.
You have Legos and a cat. And yeah. I have Legos and a cat. Inky has never shown any interest besides maybe eating them.
Well, they're forcing them to walk across them. They're not asking them nicely. They're saying, hey, here's a room full of Legos. Let's watch how you will distribute your weight.
From my experience with cats, I don't think they have the like presence of mind to make those kind of decisions if they're shoved into a room full of Legos. I think they're going, what, just all the way across the room. They're not, they're like, they know what's up. They're like, you're testing me somehow and I'm not going to play along with this. I'm just going to skitter across the floor. I think I just got to go with the flesh-eating bacteria because it's just in, like, I can't think of anything else. Hank has sabotaged my brain.
Great. I'm going to, just to separate us, go for the dog pacifier. But I also, like, I'm trying not to be tricked by the flesh-eating bacteria, this beacon, this lighthouse. And
so you're going for dog pacifier?
I'm going for dog pacifier.
I think as a cat owner, it's ridiculous to think that the Lego thing would be a thing, right?
Well, Streptococcus pyogenes genus causes strep throat, but it can also cause flesh-eating disease called necrotizing fasciitis. Infection begins with the bacteria getting into the body through an opening in the skin where it can begin to attack the connective tissue around the nerves and muscles and other parts of the body. And early on in necrotizing fasciitis, the bacteria releases a toxin called streptolysin S or SLS, which activates pain neurons and causes a lot of pain. It also causes the neuron to release a peptide into the infected tissue, and that release prevents immune cells from being able to get into the tissue and attacking the bacteria. However, scientists found that they were able to protect the tissue in mice by adding Botox or another compound to block that peptide, allowing the mouse immune system to see the bacteria and take care of it. That was the true fact. Congratulations, Sam.
What was the game theory behind this truth or fail?
You got to ask DeBokey. I don't know.
DeBokey's twisted game mind.
As for story number two, you are right. There's absolutely no truth behind that. I think DeBokey just wanted to look at cats sitting in Lego boxes. But the first one, that we've not done this with dogs, but this was inspired by a very real pain treatment for newborn humans that have to go through medical procedures, which is to coat a pacifier with sugar. So in a 1999 study assessing how well this worked, a team of researchers used crying, changes in facial expression, and other changes in newborn behavior to assess how well the sugar-coated pacifiers worked. And while the newborns were still experiencing pain, it did seem like the pacifiers worked pretty quickly, possibly just because it helped divert their attention. So they didn't like give them like a painkiller in their pacifier. They just put sugar on the pacifier, shove it in their mouth, and they do the medicine, the medical procedure they need to do.
It would be really cute if dogs had pacifiers, though. Somebody should invent that.
Well, Sam, that means that you got your 1 point headed into the next round. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back for the Fact Off. Welcome back, everybody. Get ready for the Fact Off. Our panelists have brought science facts to present in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they've presented their facts, I will judge them and award Hank Bucks to the one I think will make the best TikTok. But to decide who goes first, I have a trivia question. Legos are very painful to step on for several reasons. Our feet have a lot of nerve endings. Plus, Legos are able to withstand a tremendous amount of force before breaking, which means that when you step on a Lego, all the force goes into your foot. But more than one brave soul has decided to walk barefoot on Legos to see how long they can go for. According to the Guinness Book of World Records, the current winner was set on May 1st, 2021 by Sunny Molina. How far did Molina walk barefoot on Legos for?
I imagine once you shut off your brain to the Lego feeling, I guess it depends on what kind of walk. If you can walk slow, if you have to run, it's going to be bad. But if you can ease the pressure in some way, I don't know, or like how people walk on hot coals, they get into a mindset,
yep,
and then that just lets them do it. Well, let me, I'm like 5 feet, like 20 feet.
Okay, 20 feet.
I will say, well, I'm gonna say more than Sari, so I'll say 100 feet.
Well, since we're operating feet, it was 29,000 feet.
How do they even get that many Legos?
Yeah, they're expensive.
I think maybe it was in a circle and he just like went around and around. I'm not sure. That I don't see how else they could have done that. And apparently it's real bad. The person who held the record before decided to not try and regain his record. He said, I ended up going to the hospital and had over 100 microabrasions on both feet. I had no feeling in my feet for weeks. It was insane. So not fun to walk 5.5 miles on Lego.
Oh, wow. I feel like I've never heard anybody who had the record break be just or broken just be like, fuck it. I'm out.
No, not happening. Not for me.
Must be real bad.
I have the plaque. They're not going to come take it away from me.
Also, if you run a 10K, your friends are like, wow, congratulations. And if you're like, I stepped on Legos for 10 kilometers, your friends go, oh, okay.
All right. That means that Sam gets to decide who goes first.
Okay, I think I'll go first. Bugs, they can cause people a lot of emotional pain because they're gross, and in some cases, they can also cause physical pain. An ant's bite, a hornet's sting, etc. And because bugs are just sort of unpleasant to a lot of people and are also generally unhygienic, people do have a tendency to kill them in lots of horrible ways without really thinking about it all that much. But hey, they're bugs, right? They don't really have like advanced enough brains to feel all of the pain that we inflict on them, do they? Well, a study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in July of 2020 has potentially challenged that rationalization. In the experiment that the paper's about, the researcher set up 2 feeders of different colors filled with sugar water, a yellow one filled with a 40% solution of sugar water, and a pink one filled with some undisclosed less amount than that, and let a series of bees feed on them one at a time. So once the researchers were good and sure that the bees knew that the yellow feeder contained the tastier drink, they put the yellow feeder on a heating pad and set it to 55 Celsius, aka 131 degrees Fahrenheit. And that was, according to the lead researcher, equivalent to like if a human touched a hot plate. But apparently, that's not like something that can permanently harm a bee. It's just real hot.
Okay.
And the pink feeder remained unheated. And what they observed was that even though the yellow feeder was crazy hot, the bee still landed at and drank from that one instead of the less sugary pink feeder. And all that might make it sound like bees actually don't really process or care about pain, except that when they turned the heat off and put equally sugary mixture in both feeders, the bees would not go to the yellow feeder. Mm. So what the scientists concluded from this was that since the bees were learning that the yellow feeder hurt, they were using their brains to process the experience of pain and learn from it and making what's called a motivational trade-off, which is like a known way of processing and making decisions based on pain evidence that things that we know experience pain, like human beings, use. So the bees basically were doing the mental math to figure out if getting the old hot foot was worth eating better food. And this all adds up to suggest that bees can indeed feel pain. We don't know if they experience it the same way we do, but they seem to experience it and can form behavioral decisions around it. This is the first time that a motivational trade-off behavior was observed in a non-crustacean arthropod. Okay. And in crustaceans, our sensitive, lonely little friend, the hermit crab, also exhibited motivational trade-offs behaviors in a separate experiment where they were electrifying shells and making hermit crabs like move into electrified shells. and that study was enough to get crabs legally declared sentient in the United Kingdom. So some scientists hope that research like this will help us make decisions around things like insect-based research or insect farming that takes into account the welfare of insects, which is something that human beings traditionally aren't all that great at. So the next time you swat a mosquito or squish a spider, I don't know what you should do. Sometimes you just got to kill a bug. So maybe just forget I even told you this.
Great. Introduce the moral quandary and then just be like, actually, well, forget everything. Yeah. No.
Sari, what do you have for us?
There's a rodent that lives in the deserts of Mexico and the southwestern United States called the grasshopper mouse. And at first glance, it looks pretty ordinary. Its body is around 3 to 5 inches long. Its short fur is a sandy brownish white, and it has little paws and relatively big ears and eyes. But behaviorally, it's a little gremlin. And even though it's November now, I have to squeeze in a little more Halloween. The grasshopper mice are nocturnal, and if one wants to verbally defend its territory, it gets up on its hind legs and releases a high-pitched howl scream, kind of like a wolf. This doesn't have anything to do with pain. It just looks very cute and weird. But these mice can bite as well as bark. They're carnivorous and eat all kinds of crunchy invertebrates, like the grasshoppers that give them their name, along with crickets, beetles, tarantulas, centipedes, and scorpions. And the bark scorpion, in particular, has evolved painful and even deadly toxins. For example, humans stung by bark scorpions can experience tingling, numbness, and a sharp pain for 1 to 3 days. Proteins in the venom activate a sodium ion channel called, I'm not sure how to say this out loud, Na, so like the chemical symbol for sodium, and then a subscript V, which I assume means voltage or something like that, 1.7 in nociceptive neurons, which kickstarts the sensory pathway to tell our brain that something ouchy is happening. And in my understanding, when there's tissue damage, this 1.7 channel gets activated a little, but bark venom toxin can target it and activate it a lot. And when a grasshopper mouse gets stung by a bark scorpion, it barely notices and keeps attacking, trying to chomp its dinner. There's a lot we don't know, like why the deadly components of the toxin don't straight up kill them, but a 2013 study shed a bit of light on the pain piece. Specifically, animals have another sodium ion channel called NaV1.8 that helps transmit the nociceptive signal after 1.7 gets activated. And the grasshopper mice have a 2-amino acid substitution in their 1.8 protein that lets the channel grab and hold onto the painful venom toxin molecules, preventing the signal from being passed on. So in other words, even though the toxin is activating nociception in the 1.7 channel, it's also acting as a pain blocker at the same time in the 1.8 channel. So the mice don't feel it or any pain from other substances that the researchers experimentally injected them with, like formaldehyde. So while this isn't the only mammal that has weirdly intense pain resistance to something it eats, I believe this is the first instance of a mammal taking a toxin and turning it into a painkiller, all because of a weird nervous system mutation.
So as long as this scorpion venom is in there, they can't feel any kind of pain?
Yes, that's any kind of pain. Okay. So like, even though 1.7 gets activated because of, I don't know, an ouchie or formaldehyde gets injected or saline solution, then 1.8 being blocked still removes that domino. So no matter whatever knocks down that first domino can't cause pain.
That's wild. So that's like enough to be a problem long term, but it's not forever. It's only while they've been recently stung by a scorpion.
It's going to berserker mode.
That'd be amazing. Wouldn't it be amazing if we were that mouse? Like if that mouse became people, they'd keep those scorpions in their house to be like, I got a headache. Wink.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
Give you a sting. And they do look really cool howling. They look adorable.
Oh, the little mice howling?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's also very good. Ah, Sari, that's very weird. So it's either bees making the motivational trade-off to drink extra sugary food even when it's painful, but knowing that it's painful and reacting to that pain, which means maybe they're sentient, or grasshopper mice blocking pain using scorpion venom. Oh, that's hard. People love bees. People love bees, but also these mice howl at the moon.
Hey, why not both? You can never have too many ideas for TikToks, right?
I gotta have to give it to the mice.
Oh no. I thought Sam was the clear winner.
They're cute. And also I like the idea of injecting myself with being a large sentient sort
mouse
of civilizational
man.
Mouse man.
Yeah.
Injecting myself with like keeping a scorpion on the shelf or in the drawer.
Yeah.
It's a jar full of scorpions.
And feeling no pain for a few hours.
Yeah, and then just be like, oh, I'll get you back or something. I don't know.
What?
My daughter's been abducted.
I'm
Liam Neeson. She's been taken. That's my Liam Neeson.
That was your Liam Neeson?
That yeah, that's right. Okay. Now we're going to move on to Ask the Science Couch. I don't know who that means won though, because that's we're gonna make it a tie. It's a tie. We gotta move on. Congratulations on your tie, everybody.
Thank you.
And now we're gonna move on to Ask the Science Couch. We've got listener questions for our finely honed couch of scientific minds.
Amanda728 asks, is it possible that one pain kind of cancels out another pain? Like if I stub my toe, can I bite my tongue and take my brain off my toe? I do this. I don't know if it works.
I also do this.
I bite the inside of my cheek really. Like if I stub my toe, I bite the inside of my cheek really hard. Yeah.
I put my fingernails into my palm.
Or like if I have a really bad stomach ache, I'll do stuff like that. I'll just be like, I can't think about my stomach.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's not like to override the pain. It's just being like, I'm tired of this one. Let's give it a, let's,
yeah,
let's
have
a think
about
one for a second.
For a while.
Sari doesn't
this is
seem
very
to think
interesting.
This is a,
I don't
this
do
is a
it.
Thing though.
Huh. I think I'm the weird one now.
You just like to suffer.
Yeah, I just suffer. I'm just like, my pain. And then lay down.
Go get a scorpion.
Yeah, yeah. Go get a scorpion. Step on it a little bit. Yeah. Go get some Legos.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but that's completely separate question from whether it does anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does.
Oh.
I'll jump in. And so I didn't know if this was a thing. Called conditioned pain modulation, or CPM, and it is studied by neurobiologists, neuroscientists, and it's considered a psychophysical paradigm, which I think is interesting. It's like, how do you distract your brain from the body pain that's happening? And I have linked a YouTube video in the show flow. It's 11 minutes long, but I watched it on 2x speed to show a traditional like procedure for it and to summarize it. Usually you have a subject experience short bursts of painful things, whether it's a hot pad on their arm or a pressure point on one of their muscles, like a sharp pressure, or sticking their hand in a cold bath or an electric shock or something like that, low voltage. And you have them rate their experience of pain for each one individually. And then you have them do two at once. And when they do two at once, repeated experiments have shown that their perception of pain drops in the second one. So like by sticking your hand in cold water, the hot heat feels less painful, or the pressure pushed on your muscle feels less painful.
Does that work for my emotions as well?
You know? I might as well. they have done studies on how distraction affects pain. And that has a similar effect to doing two painful things at once. So my recommendation here is to not hurt yourself more.
Yeah. That's gonna be a big caveat to all of this.
Yeah, don't
take a cold shower. That'll be probably equally as distracting as anything that would actually damage tissue.
And you don't necessarily need it to be also painful. So you don't need to distract from sadness with another sad emotion. There's research that has shown of like high cognitive intensity. So I think in many cases, it's like doing puzzles or doing something that you're engaged in. So you can't be zoning out and like half doodling. You have to be focused on the thing. Right. Then that can reduce your sensation of pain.
Also heating pads.
Nice heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice, anything to make you feel cozy.
Yeah.
Cozy and safe.
If you want to ask the Science Couch your question, you can follow us on Twitter at SciShow Tangents, where we'll tweet out the topics for upcoming episodes every week, or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on Discord. Thank you to @OccasionalKatie, Ike on Discord, and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's very easy to do that. First, you can go to patreon.com/SciShowTangents, where you can become a patron, get access to things like our newsletter and our bonus episodes and our Discord, where you can ask us questions. Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show, and it helps other people know that too. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us.
Tell people about us.
Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our story editor is Alex Billow. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bazzio. Our editorial assistant is Dabuk Chakrabarty. Our sound design is by Joseph Kunamedic. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Hank Green. And we couldn't make any of this, of course, without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. Sea turtle shells are bony structures covered in keratinous scales called scutes with some nerve endings throughout the tissue. So when a sea turtle collides with a boat, it probably feels pretty freaking unpleasant. And besides the pain, its shell can get damaged so that air pockets form underneath the bone in what's sometimes called bubble butt syndrome.
I don't like this.
Oh.
These
they shouldn't have made it sound so nice.
They shouldn't
bubble
have made
butt
it
syndrome
sound so freaking
nice.
Funny. Yeah.
It sounds like fun, good butt.
It does sound fun.
Yeah. But these air pockets throw off the turtle's buoyancy and its ability to dive beneath the surface of the ocean.
Oh, no.
So wildlife rehabilitators try to keep a close eye out for bubble butts on injured turtles because they probably won't survive long by themselves.
Do they literally
what do you do
have
about
like
a bubble butt?
A big booty, or do they have, is it just microscopic?
It's like a bubble under their shell. It's pretty substantial. And you can see them like kind of tilt in the water because their buoyancy is all messed up.
Sometimes the butt facts are sad.
We can have a funny, painful butt fact.
We had the butt fact about the seals getting their butts eaten by seagulls. That was hilarious.
The baby seals getting their butts eaten.
Yeah.